We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the In the Know Podcast. I'm your temporary guest host, Nick Lowen, joined by Jonathan Graham McQueen. How are you, Graham?
Doing all right. Can't complain.
So I'm coming in with a little bit more energy on the introduction because I was told to, but also because the most important time of the NBA year is upon us. And you know what time that is, Graham.
Oh, my gosh. It is the most exciting time. I'm sure everybody knows exactly what we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
Right around the corner, a little bit over a week away.
Summer League. That is what we're talking about. I have a passion for Summer League that I don't think a lot of other people have, because everyone I tell is shocked by it. What are your feelings on Summer League? Do you actually watch it?
You know, I did watch a little of it last year and the year before. In passing, I put it on the TV, and I'm pretty sure I zoned out within 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. It's like you're going to a high school AAU tournament with people you know, like professional players that you know. But there's nothing about it's better. Like, the product's not any better, really.
No.
That's why I love it, is because I think there's no reason it should exist. Besides giving, like, players a professional excuse to be in Las Vegas for a while.
Some of these guys, yeah, you get a trip out to Las Vegas, you get to be on, not national television, but...
Oh, yeah.
Like, you get to play basketball on television. That's cool. That's a cool thing. Some of these guys, that's the only chance they get.
Yeah, I mean, if you're DJ Kennedy, 6'6", small forward from a Russian team, this is your moment.
Yeah.
I can't say the Russian team's name. I'm just looking at our roster.
And Nisei Krasnursk.
Oh, shout out to Ryan Schwan. Just a pronunciation job after his own heart. I mean, that's probably pretty close.
I did my best.
Yeah, I mean, and so does Ryan, often.
Yeah.
So I actually do enjoy Summer League, but I am a little bit more excited than usual this year because our roster does have a few interesting names. So before we get to free agency, how about we just run through what we're expecting to see in Summer League? I mean, the basketball product like never really matters, right? This is mostly about scouting.
Hey, we were 5-1 last year.
Yeah, and people started to care about the Summer League championship.
Not signing Seth Curry was the biggest mistake of our entire season last year.
You know, the only thing that separates Seth and Steph, besides the P, I guess, is an elite level ball handling. Besides that, they're practically the same player.
Basically the same.
Yeah, and granted, that's most of Steph's like ability and uniqueness as a player, but, you know, I can't believe we didn't sign him for that. And I actually think there are a couple of heartbreakers on this team for fans. But let's go right through it. So, top bill, Buddy Hield. We joked on the draft pod about how much time we would play him. Do you still expect to see him get a lot of run?
They said, right? Didn't they say they were going to play him? But who knows how much he'll get. it might be one of those things where he plays like 20 something minutes the first game, 10 the second game, and then we don't see him, you know. It's like, all right, you got your little token, here he is. All right, now let's actually focus on, we need to see if we're going to put any of these other guys on the roster.
Yeah, and I would actually be pretty upset if he got more than, like, if he ended up playing in more than a couple or three games.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's worth it at all. Like, what do we have to learn about Buddy Hield at this point?
Hype.
Yeah, hype, right? But, I mean, when you're coming from just a horrific injury plague season, is this really the time to be like, yeah, go get a couple extra meaningless games in?
The only reason I could think to play Buddy Hield more than two games in the summer league. Nope, nothing. Literally nothing. Nothing comes to mind.
Yeah, and people who are arguing that, like, oh, this is a time to adjust to the NBA, there aren't NBA players playing in this. That's why they're in summer league. And it's not like we're running out the Pelicans' offense and defense. Like, this is a goof. Another guy like Cheick Diallo, our second-round pick, who we did not keep the podcast going for last time to talk about, I think actually summer league is kind of an interesting fit for him. He's a really fascinating guy. He had some problems at Kansas, which led to him missing some games and getting benched. So I think his stock kind of dropped because of that. But former McDonald's All-American and Game MVP.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is actually the kind of format he could potentially flourish in right off the bat, which is really unstructured basketball that just favors the athletic and aggressive. So yeah. I kind of expecting a couple of huge games from Cheick.
I think they had a lot of nice things to say about this guy. And when they interviewed him, when they introduced him and Buddy, he seemed like he had a really good head on his shoulders. All he talked about was, you know, I mean, what you would want him to talk about. What else is he going to say? You know, oh, I'm just going to work. I'm going to work. I'm going to work hard. You know, I'm going to prove that I'm supposed to be here. But he seemed like he spoke well, and he just seemed like he had a good head on his shoulders. And they had more to say about him than I thought they would have to say about him. On a day when it was clearly about somebody else, they did make it a point to say, you know, we do really like this guy. We made a trade to specifically go get this guy. So
yeah, and so the knock on, for those of you guys who don't know, the knock on Cheick coming out of Kansas is mostly lack of experience and sort of some refined offensive skills. He didn't start playing basketball until he was like 13 or something. So he's just kind of this typical, really long stretch guy who is athletic but hasn't quite figured it out yet. But he was still kind of fell a little bit further than most people expected. I think most of the mocks I saw had him going in the mid-20s, and he fell into the second round. So I think the NBA comparisons people always bring up are these really athletic, high-energy guys like Kenneth Faried. Tristan Thompson has been thrown around.
Mm.
I don't know if those are fair comparisons, really, because I don't know if he really has... I mean, especially the Tristan Thompson one. That one just feels a little bit off to me.
Thompson's not really undersized.
I feel like Tristan's actually kind of a little bit undersized. Big. I mean, because Tristan's really a four that plays the five, kind of, I think of him.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I mean, Diallo's almost the size of a small forward.
I'm looking at his Draft Express page, just so people know. He's got him at, without shoes, he's like 6'7", 6'8". In shoes, 6'9". He does have almost a 7'5" wingspan, so that's nice. But
yeah, so again, like one of these really long defensive guys that you can play next to Anthony Davis, hopefully in some form or fashion. If Anthony's the big, he's the four or whatever. I mean, having said all of this, though, he's such a project.
Oh yeah, so 19 years old.
Yeah, 19 years old, didn't really get a lot of run in college. And like, if you watch him play, you can see why people get excited about him or why people were higher on him. But yeah, I mean, the guy just hasn't figured it all yet out. And that's a lot to ask for somebody who's been playing basketball for 6 years to have to be, you know, a competent NBA player. But for anyone thinking that he's going to come in and be a sixth or seventh or even eighth man on this team, I think that's really unlikely. Well, we should hope that doesn't happen, because
barring injuries.
Yeah, injuries.
He's not going to get anything but real garbage time. Like I'm talking, like, you know, blowing a team out by 30, 40 with 2 minutes left garbage time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just got a long way to go, but they really did. I mean, they targeted this guy. They did make a trade to go get him. He did seem like he knew that he had a long road ahead of him, but he looked confident. He sounded confident. He talked well. So, I mean, who knows? Who knows what this guy can be?
I mean, I'd rather have him than Skal Labissiere. Going into the draft, I had him above Skal on just my mental big board. And that says more about Skal than Cech, really, but that's at least, I think, the potential that's there. The most I think you'd expect from him this season would be if towards the end of the year he kind of came out and came off the bench in like a high-energy role. So,
yeah,
like, I guess maybe mid-third quarter just was the guy who came in for 6 to 10 minute stretches and just tried to get 2 or 3 offensive rebounds.
And, you know, that's not too far out of the realm of possibility. You know, if he can pick it up, you know, through half a season, you know, he could earn minutes. We do have minutes to hand out to people, so.
Yeah, which is, you know, as much as I made fun of the idea that the second round would be important, we're such in a weird cap position and so many free agents outgoing that someone like Cech could actually end up getting, you know, a semi-consistent 8 or 10 minutes just because those minutes are there. But before we get to that, there's two other guys to mention on the Summer League team, in my opinion. And the first is Anthony Cat Barber, who played point guard at NC State last year. And Graham, you are not a big fan of college basketball, right?
Well, I'm a Duke fan as well. My father went to Duke. Oh,
yeah, so this is a very biased podcast. But
very biased podcast. So I mean, I like it. I like the storylines around it, but the tournament's exciting, but it's hard for me to follow throughout the year. Sometimes I think the game's just too slow for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll watch it. I'll watch the big games. I'll follow it, but I'm not the biggest fan. Yeah.
So were you aware of Anthony Cat Barber before he showed up on our Summer League roster?
Like, I knew he was a player in college basketball.
Yeah.
That's
the thing about Cat Barber I'll always remember from last year was there was this hipster opinion. I mean, it might not have been wrong, but there was just kind of this, like, snotty college basketball opinion that the best college basketball player in North Carolina was Anthony Barber. So that's a shot at, like, Duke, who had the number 2 overall pick, and in UNC, who I think had 2 or 3 draft picks in this most recent draft. So, for those of you who don't know, Barber led college players in scoring for a minute and was just kind of one of these typical, exciting, undersized point guards who has the ability to score. I don't know. My feeling is that he doesn't really have like an NBA skill set. But most of that's because the point guard position is so deadlocked that there's just so much talent there. I think it's going to be hard for another guy who's, you know, between 6'1 and 6'3, who primarily is a scorer, to come in. That seems tough. But on the other hand, he's also another guy who could be really exciting in Summer League, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he could get buckets.
I mean, you see that all the time, right? These undersized guards who, they know how to shoot, they know how to score. They might not measure out to what you want them to, but you put them out there and you see them just drop numbers all the time. All the time. And you wonder, like, why doesn't this guy get a shot? You know, he just look at these ridiculous numbers. I think he was top 10 in scoring this year, right?
Yeah, I think he ended up averaging, I think, 23, 24 a game. Yeah, 23.5 per game. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive. And he threw up, you know, 4.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists. So, in college, he's a well-rounded player, but who knows how well that translates. And generally speaking, We remember the mistakes in NBA drafts, but the NBA is actually a pretty efficient labor market. So when a guy falls out of the draft, there's usually good reason for it.
Yeah.
So I think most people are aware that he just doesn't really have that next level in him. But there are other undrafted guys we're going to talk about some later who might get big contracts. So Maybe this is a diamond in the rough. But if this is the offseason of reasonable expectations, don't count on him being the second point guard for the Pelicans.
No.
And other than that, before we move out of Summer League, because this is such a tough thing to talk about in depth because it's so pointless, Michael Qualls, who played college ball in my home state, University of Arkansas. If you don't remember him, he actually came out last year, I think was another guy who's expected to go in the 20s, pretty athletic. What happened was, I think he was, it was during a workout with the Phoenix Suns, and he tore his ACL, was ruled out for 6 to 12 months, went undrafted. I think he played in training camp with the Thunder, and then just kind of bounced around from their D-League team and then was out of the league. So he's back. I actually think outside of, if there's somebody who wasn't drafted this year, this is actually the guy for me to watch, because very recently he had real NBA talent, and him ending up on the Pelicans roster seems very cleverly done by his agent, in my opinion. Like, this is a team that's looking for wings, and he fits the athletic, solid defender role. The question to me is just, are you going to see that first-round talent that you saw last year? But he's somebody I want to keep an eye on. I don't know if there's really much more to say about him, because there's just so little going on there. If he hasn't recovered from the knee injury, that it's really easy to walk away from a summer league guy, you know?
Yeah, and you never know with these injuries anymore, right? ACL used to be, no matter what, you're done, right? ACL used to be, well, your career is over. Now you see guys coming back from them, and you see guys coming back early from them. So, yeah. I mean, you don't know.
And
it's
tough, too, because I would almost, and I feel like this is just unfortunate for him, but if I knew he was on an NBA team for the last year, like if he were a second-round pick who just got cut or something, you could at least say, well, he's working with an NBA-quality training staff. And I don't know anything about his recovery. Like, maybe he was working with a staff that was that quality and had all of the same expectations and checks and balances that you would if you were on an NBA roster, but just as a fan who has no insider knowledge, that's my immediate fear of, like, did he get the full recovery routine that he really needed being out of the league?
Right.
And I think it's just hard to say. And when he's out of the league, has he stayed in shape? Has he worked on his jump shot? Because the thing is, the league just moves fast. So, you know, a year ago, he was 21, and it was kind of reasonable, but now it's like, he's 22, and he still doesn't have a jump shot, and he's got this injury. Maybe teams will be ready to move on. So, I don't know. But he's definitely someone to look at, I guess.
Keep an eye on.
I mean, it's just the summer league. Like, it's so tough.
Yeah.
Because I just realized there's a guy on our summer league team who was in the 50-40-90 club for the D-League.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he's not making an NBA team, but that's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I love the summer league, is we're going to get so excited about probably four of these guys making our roster, and probably two of them will. And it's the two we drafted.
Yeah, it's the, yeah.
I love it so much. There's no reason for us to do this, but the NBA just wants to sell those $3 league passes for like 10 games in the summer, and
it's a chance for someone to look really, it's a chance for someone to look really smart. Like, I should just throw out, I should just throw out a name right now and be like, this guy's going to be on the roster. You know what? If I'm right, people will think I'm smart.
You should be like, KT Harrell is a guy to watch.
And then Larry Drew II will not make the, Larry Drew will not make the roster.
Oh,
there you go. That's my,
that's a shot at Mr.
That's
Drew.
My hot take on the summer league.
Okay. Let's talk about something we actually know about. Because those were the four guys that joined the roster without doing any prior research. So let's move on to really what's the thing that we should be paying attention to, which free agency. It starts Thursday night at midnight. Right now, the Pelicans just got news that Alonzo G declined his player option, which was for about $1.3 million. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that? Were you disappointed?
No. I mean...
Oh, really? I was disappointed. That's funny.
You were disappointed?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, I don't have anything against Alonzo personally. I think he's... Would you have something against him?
No. It's a smart move on his part.
Oh, it's a smart move. I mean, I feel bad for the Pelicans, but it's definitely the move he should have made.
I mean, the Pelicans have been plugging and chugging on the wings for like 5 years. You know, I think this offseason's they'll bring in the best. This is my prediction. They'll bring in the best wing that we've seen on the Pelicans in the last 5 years. And think that's something, but it's not, because there's not really been any talent on the wings, you know?
Yeah, that just makes me get so excited to get to your top free agents list. You just stay away from your Twitter account after this comes out. I was disappointed because Alonzo was on, I think, a $1.3 million option. And that's just a really good value, even though I don't like him as a starter or even a consistent role player. It's just hard to beat those numbers. But yeah. I think now that he's opted out, he actually has a potential at a pretty nice contract, so I can't fault him for it.
I think it's a good sign that he was considering coming back for that low of a number in this type of free agency when, one, wings are in a high demand, and two, you know, there's money to be thrown around. The fact that he was thinking about coming back to us after such a terrible season, I think says a lot about, I don't know, I guess the mentality around the organization or something, that players could go through a season like that, as frustrating as that, and still want to be around here. You know, he did opt out. But I think all reports were that, like, you know, he considered coming back. He thought about coming back. During the season, I think it was, like, Anthony Davis would talk to him a lot. I remember reports about that, about just because he's been around the league for a while. He's played with guys. But I think that's a good sign. But I'm not gonna miss him.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been a little happy if he'd come back, but it would just been for salary cap since, like,
I mean, it's one less wing on the roster. You know, it's our most position of need. So
yeah, I mean, when people, like, right now, if you're drawing out the roster, you're putting Quincy Pondexter at small forward,
mm-hmm.
and playing him a lot of minutes there. He's not a big guy. And
not a big guy.
I don't really think we're as ready to run as small as people think.
And I don't think – we don't know if he's ready to run, literally.
Yeah, good point.
So, injuries, you know?
Yeah,
they just
tough.
Never go away.
So, outside of that, there are two players with player options, Tony Douglas and Luke Babbitt.
Right.
I think we're going to exercise both of those. I haven't heard any word about it, just because the numbers are both so small. Together, they're about $3.5 million. So making up, you know, a really small portion of the cap, and that just seems to be something that would matter these days. Do you agree?
I like both of them coming back as well. Babbitt, for some reason, didn't really get any run the beginning of the season. Then you saw him come in, you know, after the season was kind of down the tubes already. And look good on the offensive end, at the least, you know. And Tony Douglas, this year, I thought, was like a true professional, I guess. He came in, he competed every night. He almost shot 40% from three. I mean, he gave you a lot of what you wanted. He tried on defense, you know. He really tried.
Yeah.
He's a limited player. That's what he is. But I think he's a good player to have, you know, as depth. And having both of them back is good.
I mean, he's not really an NBA player.
It's the right move, both on the court and for the cap. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the truth about both of those guys, and especially Tony, is, I mean, he's just not an NBA player.
No.
But it doesn't really matter when, like, most NBA teams have eight guys that are going to get real run, and then the rest of the guys you need there for injuries and for the Tuesday night in January in Milwaukee. And I think Tony's actually kind of the ideal guy if you can fit him in with your salary cap, which we can, because, like, I don't mind him coming in when, you know, Drew's feeling a little bit sore and it's a back-to-back in Milwaukee. Like, that's...
Yeah,
I mean, there's a chance he goes off from three, so it's just fine. So including those guys, our salary cap number right now stands at about $66 million, a little bit over. With the cap being where it's at, that would give us about $28 million in room. Obviously, there's all sorts of rules that go into how we can use that cash that I think we'll probably stay away from and save those for written pieces on the site.
But you just don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah, like, so right now, we're... just by some miracle we're going after a top free agent, which there's been none of those rumors yet, so I doubt it would happen.
Yeah,
we can't offer like the biggest max, but it's also a pretty small jump to get there, right? Like if you move like Alexis Ajinsa and attach him to Omer Asik or something and got a trade just to dump those guys, you would be right there.
Yeah.
And you can trade into space pretty easily this year because everyone's got cap space.
Exactly.
So this is kind of the most malleable market we've seen.
Yeah, I think it's
really in a long time. So,
I'm not sure what's going to happen, though.
Yeah, and
I keep going back and forth. I want to ask you this, actually. So, right off the bat, midnight.
Yeah.
July 1st. How many, do you think there's just going to be a flood of whatever, Woj bombs or like, you know, right off the back four, we're going to hear like four contracts are just announced like, you know, within 15 minutes of free agency opening? Or is it going to be like, they're going to be some kind of hesitancy to hand out? Or I think
it's going to be a little slow.
I think it's going to be like right off the bat, stuff's going to start happening.
Oh, really?
Hopefully. But what do you think?
Well, I don't. So when LeBron went to Miami, do you remember how slow that year was? Because he
everybody was just like, "Well, we don't know what he's doing, so let's just wait for LeBron, and then the rest of us can figure it out."
Yeah, and I think KD, not to that extent, but I think he's a bit of a linchpin for that this year because you've got three or four teams that like. So if Golden State misses out on KD, which I kind of have the feeling they will, then they're going to Harrison Barnes and Festus Ezeli and trying to work out deals, right? But they're not going to work out that deal until they hear a definite no from Kevin. I have the feeling that Durant's the type of guy who will say, I'm not interested in coming here, and narrow his list down by rejections rather than taking his talent somewhere. Because, I mean, he was pretty upfront to Washington that he just had no interest, right?
So, which was, just to talk about that for a second, just to throw my two cents, because I live in Washington right now, for people who don't know. I have no idea why anybody ever thought that was a good move. Like, sure, it's his home. Cool. Basketball now. Let's talk about his job. Is that really a good opportunity? Is that really a good basketball move? Financial move? Whatever you want to say? Career move? No. I never saw it. I think that was the dumbest. Like, okay, LeBron went home. Now every superstar is probably considering
that. Yeah, and I also think that that's part of the reason he wouldn't do it, right? Is because that's right. LeBron's narrative, and then, like, do you really just want to be the guy who's following around? Like, for somebody who's so aware that he's been second best his whole life,
yeah,
why would he make more comparisons to the best player of his generation?
Yeah.
I think that actually is how someone like Kevin Durant thinks. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I always thought that was a weird storyline. For even non-basketball reasons. But
yeah.
So I think he's going to hold up the market, but I think he'll be, I think he's a lot more really just reasonable about stuff than LeBron was at 26. So I think it's going to happen pretty quickly after that. I think it'll be a pretty fast free agent market, honestly, after that.
Yeah.
Because then people,
I don't know how much he'll hold it up just because, like, I don't know how much he'll hold it up just because it's a little bit different from when LeBron held up everything forever. That was the slowest free agency. But just because there's less maneuvering teams have to do because everybody has the space, right? Everybody is waiting on LeBron because, you know, free agency normally, like, teams have to go through like a series of moves to make the room to sign the people they want or whatever. It's a little bit different now that everybody has room so that they can just go out and get whoever they want, right? There will be a little bit of a mad dash regardless of what happens with KD. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true, but there's still a line of people waiting for him, so there's a domino effect. But also, I don't know if this is what I heard, and I don't know if it's been confirmed, but the rumor was that KD wanted to get his free agency decision made quickly because he wanted to go on vacation and not worry about it. So, yeah, like, there's an honest-to-God rumor of, like, oh, no, this is going to be decided by...
There's also that factor.
Yeah, like, I mean, which is kind of how I would handle it, because I would think, I know myself well enough to be like, dude, you're just going to take forever to do this, like, get it done before the weekend. So, yeah, apparently I'm looking at it now, apparently he's got meetings with through the second, so that's Saturday, a couple of days after it starts, and then he might have a few more the July 3rd weekend, and then I think he's going to make his decision. So, yeah, at most we'd see a slow couple of days, but there's still going to be – I could actually see Ryan Anderson being one of the first guys off the board.
Really?
Yeah, because I just feel like a couple of teams have already expressed specific interest in him, specifically the Wizards, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like if somebody just slaps, you know, a big contract at him, he's not going to fuss about it. He's just going to get paid. And I could see him being – he's such a known quantity that I could just see him being one of the first guys off. Someone like Harrison Barnes, for example – is going to wait a little bit, I think, because he wants to see what happens with KD and Golden State.
Yeah. Well, he wants to go back. He's said it, right? He wants to go back to the Warriors, so he's going to wait and see what happens with them.
And even someone like Kent Bazemore, I think, is going to play a lot, play the field as much as he can. So, I just don't see Anderson doing that.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, that's mostly me speculating about his personality, which, okay, so let's talk about the guys who are leaving the Pelicans, or at least free agents.
Ryan. So we talked about right, Anderson. We already mentioned him, right?
Right, yeah.
I think I think he's leaving. I think you're right. I don't know if he's going to leave right off the bat like you think, but...
Do you think the Pelicans are even going to reach out to him?
I think a change of scenery would do him well, one thing. Two, yeah, he's going to get a good offer. He's going to get a really good offer. So I think he's gone.
Yeah. Do you think the Pelicans are even going to contact him?
Not in a, like, hey, let's set up a meeting and talk about what we could possibly do way. More of like, hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Yeah. That's the only thing I can really see is Dell just keeping in contact. And as soon as Ryan's like, you know, I got this 4-year deal from the Wizards with an obscene amount of money. It's going to be like, well, you better sign that, Ryan.
Yeah.
You're not going to get this lucky twice.
They're just going to keep tabs on each other. That's about it. Yeah.
I think he's deleted Eric Gordon's phone number from his phone.
I've deleted the last 5 years of Eric Gordon on the court from my brain.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is like, so have you heard a rumor about Eric Gordon, by the way?
Actually, no.
Yeah, I haven't heard a single Eric Gordon. I've heard a Norris Cole rumor.
What? No.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't real. It was like...
Was it follow LeBron?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. I was like, yeah. Norris is going to go back home to LeBron, but which is not a real rumor, even though that's just something that's a joke we all enjoy. But yeah, Eric Gordon, as soon as Buddy Hield gets drafted, and even before that, his number was definitely deleted. That's probably was Danny Ferry's first move. He was like, it's so great to be working with you, Dell. Can I see your cell phone? And just deleted that number, and new phone, who dissed Eric Gordon. I kind of had this feeling we would see a couple of, Brooklyn Nets are looking at Eric Gordon to come off the bench. The Knicks need a shooter. But I've heard nothing.
Well, it's... Yeah, like you said, somebody kind of needs a shooter. That's it. That's not your first free agency need. That's like, okay, I'm filling out my roster. Who's a good shooter on the guard or a wing that I could just throw in there? Right? That's not – you can get those kind of – that's anywhere? Not really, but kind of?
Yeah. So I've made this point before, and maybe it applies to Eric, that everyone's talking about how so many people are going to get overpaid, and – just so everyone knows, we've recorded this podcast before, so all of the rants I'm going to go on, Graham has already heard, but it's fresh for the viewer, for the listeners, first time. So,
it's worth hearing it twice.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, so this point is basically, there's a finite amount of money in the system, right? And you can argue that some guys are going to get overpaid because it's more money than we've seen before in terms of cap space. The problem that I have with that logic is, then some people will necessarily get underpaid. Because if you're saying that, okay, well, there's a certain subset of players that'll get assigned a value greater than they're worth, then that means that there's less money left for the other guys at the other end of the other subset, right? So I'm actually starting to wonder if everyone just passes on Eric Gordon and he becomes like the Knicks' fifth attempt at free agency, and he gets like $8 million a year and a $94 million cap. Isn't that a little bit of a steal? I mean, I feel like it's not because I can't watch him play basketball anymore. But from
like, it's only a steal if he's actually good for you.
Yeah, if you really just need shooting,
yeah,
then I think he could actually might be kind of a bargain get.
Yeah,
I don't think Eric wants to come back here though.
I doubt it. He's been here 5 years and not well. I guess one of them was, but 4 out of 5 years were unmitigated disasters for him. Not all of them were disasters for the team, but for him, you know, his time here will always kind of just, it's not even a what if, you know, it's not like, oh, what if Eric Gordon, you know,
had yeah,
it's I don't want to say revulsion, but
Jesus,
it's kind of ew, you know, that's my reaction.
Yeah, I actually think there's a really interesting long form piece about Eric Gordon's time in New Orleans, because I can't really think of another time where a young superstar or young potential superstar comes to a city and never really accepts the city, and the city doesn't get behind him. And it just sort of ever. Been this long fizzling out period to being a below average player that feels yeah. kind of unprecedented, you know?
People forget because it seems so long ago now. He was very good.
Yeah.
He was really good with the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, there was a moment where people thought he would be the next best shooting guard in the NBA. People thought that was the ceiling. I remember celebrating that we got him instead of Eric Bledsoe in the Chris Paul trade.
Yeah, I bought into it.
That's nuts to think that we were like, oh, we got more value.
You know, I'm not afraid to admit this. I liked Chris Kamen. Yeah. I thought that was going to be like, you know, either Eric Gordon would work out as a superstar or he wouldn't. I didn't really know much about Aminu, but I thought, for some reason, I thought Kamen would just be the one who ended up sticking around and producing for us, like a big for us.
Instead, he was just like, I'm going to get my buckets and get a contract. Do you remember how much he chucked that season?
Oh my God.
It was so weird to watch Chris Kamen come in and just shoot as soon as he touched it.
I never saw it, but he has some kind of show.
Yeah, is it like a big game hunting show or something? I don't know. I'm sure I don't get that channel with my rabbit ears.
No.
So anyway, those are the two main guys. We've already made fun of Norris Cole, so we can check that box. The only other free agent, which of course we have to mention, is Kendrick Perkins, who I actually feel bad for. I hope he finds somewhere he can be a player coach.
He was really frustrated with this year, I'm sure. You saw it. They put up an article about it on ESPN, right? It was the headline was like, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, I feel bad for him. He did not sign up for what he went through. And you know what? He went out there and he played and he did his thing like that you would expect him to do. When he got on the court, he did his whole enforcer thing. And you know what? He hit a lot of shots. He didn't miss a shot for like 7 games or 10 games or whatever it is.
Yeah. He had that weird streak.
It might have just been like 6 shots, but he made them all, you know? So
yeah. And I remember there was a moment where he came into that Golden State game, and for a split second, I was like, wait, Kendrick Perkins isn't that old.
He's not.
Could he be good in a certain situation? Yeah. By the way, for everyone who thinks Kendrick is like 38, he's 30. I mean, he's not old. So he's just the most bizarre player, because I'm convinced he's ready to be a coach. And I think he was actually bummed out this year because he had to play.
Yeah,
like I think that was the most disappointing thing. I think he was fine to come in when there were injuries, but when he realized the injuries were going to last all year, I think that's when he started to really get frustrated. Like, he wants to be the wise counsel to a young team at this point, or just get another championship. So
he needs to be on a bench. I think
he was made for it. I think he's a great potential associate head coach.
Really?
Yeah, I really think he could do that role very well. Like, the Thunder always talk about when he was on their team, he was literally a guy that was kind of this team therapist that people would call when they weren't getting enough shots. And I think he would just be really, really great at that. I don't think he or anyone is the guy to call when everyone's injured and it's just not going the way you want it to go. So I think Kendrick's gone, and I really kind of hope the best for him. Go to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Take very just look this up.
Speaking of Cleveland, he is a month older than LeBron James.
That's nuts.
Nuts.
Wow.
Yeah. He seems so old.
When you watch him play, he seems like the opposite of LeBron James.
He seems like his body has completely deteriorated.
And just so everyone knows, I just now realized this, or put it together, same draft. Kendrick Perkins, LeBron James. LeBron was number one overall. Kendrick was 27. Maybe I'm just being dumb and I should have known this. But if you'd have been like, when was Kendrick drafted? Even though I just said he's 30, I'd have been like 1997.
Yeah, undoubtedly it had to have been the 90s. He seems like a 90s guy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Nope. A month older than LeBron James.
Yep.
So that means, now that we've broken down our feelings about Kendrick Perkins in detail, we've got a lot of holes. Like, right now, if we do exercise those two options for Douglas and Babbitt, that's 13 players. But a lot of those guys you're not expecting to play, right? Or no, I'm sorry, I miscounted. That would be 7, 8, 9 players that are on the roster. So there's some spots to be taken up. But that doesn't include Buddy, I guess. And I guess we both are going to assume Chuck is going to be on the team.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's still a little bit of space, but I even though we've got guys on the roster potentially, I think the bigger issue is minutes, right?
Yeah.
So what are your biggest needs going into free agency for the Pelicans?
Well, you need security for Buddy, right? You don't know what he's going to do. He could come in and be completely NBA ready. He could come in and not be ready really at all. He might take some time, right? And that's fine. Just because he's, you know, a little bit older for a draft pick doesn't mean he needs, you know, he's not going to be able to develop. But apart from that,
you've got to have
some kind of security for the guard position. Because you also don't know what you're going to get with Kupon. Speaking of Kupon, you need another wing. You know, Alonzo G just opted out. They did not extend a qualifying offer to Ennis, who was another one of those guys they could have, you know, brought back. I think they said they'd like to bring him back if it works out that way. But right now, I think he's out of the picture. So, and that's like it. You know, you got Dante Cunningham is playing the three again. That's like, and then Kupon, who you don't really know if he's healthy yet or not. That's it. So you need another wing, and then you need a big. So, I mean, you need a guard, a wing, and a big. You got a lot of holes. You know, with Anderson leaving, that's a lot of minutes. And that's something not a lot of people are talking about, because every single offseason for the last 5 years, it's always been a wing, a wing, a wing, a wing. And again, this season, it's still a wing. But not a lot of people are talking about this. They need a big. They really need a big. Davis can't go through the season playing next to Ashik unless he somehow returns to form like he was a couple years ago. And then just Cunningham and Ajinsa. You know, he really kind of – I would like to see them find a way to get him a real well-rounded two-way big, you know? I think that's not a lot of people have talked about.
The one guy you haven't mentioned is Tyreke Evans, and he falls in the Quincy Pondexter category of, I don't know if you can count on him.
Is he healthy? Is he in the team's plans? Last year of his contract, they shopped him at the deadline last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, I think he's either going to be injured or he's going to get traded. And I really think it's really that binary to me. So in terms of getting minutes, I'm not sure he's going to be there for him. So, yeah, you're right. It's a thin team. There's not a lot of depth, and there's really a lot of minutes are going out the door.
Yep.
I said in the draft podcast, and have kind of stuck to it after thinking about it for a while, that I actually think another big is a bigger option than a wing player.
Mm-hmm.
I hear what you're saying with how long we've gone without a serviceable wing, but I mean, part of this is just pragmatics that, you know, wings are going to be in high demand because teams are going to look for guys who can play 2 through 4 and, you know, stretch out lineups that I think there's a potential to get a guy who could play next to Anthony, hopefully as a center and get some value there. Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot harder to find that value on the perimeter. So, and this is kind of my whole theory for this year of free agency. I would like to see the team add a couple of guys that are pretty good. Go after sort of diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
And not swing after the bigger name players. So stay away from your Chandler Parsons, that kind of deal where you're, I see how that type of guy might fit for you, but just don't blow all of your money this year trying to get back to being a 45 win team.
Yes.
And instead maybe go after guys, and you know, we're going to talk about these guys later because I think we're both fans of them, but someone like Jared Dudley. And just get somebody who can be serviceable, who's a high character guy, and try to save those moves for 2017, where the cap's going to go up even more. The draft's a lot deeper, so your draft pick could have more value depending on where that ends up. Mm-hmm. There's just all these things in play, right?
Yeah. So, and I think filling out those minutes, right? Because 28 million was the number around 28 millions are in cap space. You throw all that at one player, or so much of that at one player, you have too many holes, right? Like you said, you're going to have to try to find value and fill in the minutes. And I think doing that, again, for next offseason, it puts you in a better position for next offseason, and not just in a financial way, but filling out those minutes with good, consistent players gets you kind of back into a winning basketball, right? I don't think we're that far away from winning a winning team, like a 40 to 45 win team. And competing for the eighth seed, right? That's not too far away. I don't think you need to add like a $18, $20 million guy to get that. I think you just need consistent, smart players who will show up and do the things required for winning. You say, well, show up on defense, not have these mental lapses, right? A guy like Jared Dudley is exactly who that is. He's going to get blown by every now and then because he's a little slow, but he's not going to blow his assignment, you know, 4 times a game or whatever it is. You know, he's not going to be a one-way player, and he's not going to cost that much. I think you get a couple guys like that who can take some of the, you know, all these minutes that are available now, you can kind of distribute them. You get a more winning team around Davis, you start to look better for next offseason, and you still have your space. And now you have depth. If you add a big piece next summer to the depth, on top of the depth you get this summer, I think that's the path that's laid out for them. I think that's what they need to do.
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, to put it in more sort of theory terms, I think there's going to be a first mover disadvantage this year. I think there's a lot of teams who feel like they're one splash away. And
yeah,
I'd rather just wait and let those teams make their mistakes.
Oh yeah, I think Dwight Howard's looking for $31 million, things like that. Let's stay away from stuff. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's talk about this now. Who are your top guys? We've both kind of argued for a more reserved approach to free agency.
Yeah,
and we'll go back and talk about if there's anyone that are sort of at the top 10 of the list that entice us. But if you just had to go to Dell right now and say, here's a piece of scrap paper with 3 names at it, get these guys, who would they be?
In no particular order, right? And if you've been, have been to the site recently, you know that I put up, I think, 6 names of free agents. I do have 1 or 2 more that I'm going to put up. I've just been, they're coming out. Don't worry. But top 3, this is a guy, I think this was the longest piece that I wrote, was Evan Turner. And now other people have started to talk about him. People don't like Evan Turner because he can't shoot, but there's this whole thing on like these 3-and-D wings, right? We just talked about it. It's going to be hard to find value at the wing this summer, just because it's like the hot commodity. You know, it's the trends, it's the topic, right? Get the guy between 6'5 and 6'8 or 6'4 and 6'7 or whatever, who can switch and play multiple positions and knock down a shot from the corner, right? That's like the trendy thing. Guys like Harrison Barnes, guys like Chandler Parsons, guys like Nicholas Batum, guys like what's the other one? Kent Bazemore, right? And I think that's not where you're going to find your value. If you look at the team and like some of the things they need to improve on, Evan Turner does all those things that the team needs to improve on. He might not be able to shoot, but we just added, you know, the best college shooter in the last whatever. You know, we can find shooting. This guy, he's not going to cost as much. I think that's like the one name on the wing that's he's going to get like a good chunk of money, I think. Not like a huge chunk, but he'll get like a good chunk. And I think, yeah, what was it? Off season, press conference.
Alvin Jensen.
6'7" facilitator. I think we really need that athletic 6'7" facilitator. That's your guy. That is your guy.
I love this because, again, we've recorded this podcast before, and I laugh so hard when you ran as fast as you could to say Evan Turner. The first time we recorded this, you did it again this time, and I still think it's just as funny.
I know. You're not laughing as much this time.
I'm not laughing as much this time. I knew it was coming, but... And I'll give you credit. The more you talk about him, the more I look at him, I actually see where you're coming from, and I agree more than I thought I would. The deficiencies are there.
Yeah,
I think that's fine.
You don't have to start him.
Yeah, the simplest way for me to understand Evan Turner on this team is the best version of Tyreek. Like that's what Evan Turner could potentially be.
Evan Turner would be Tyreek who doesn't use. Like so many possessions on himself. Right?
Yeah, like an Evan Turner that could exist in a team concept. And I know that might be hard for people because it doesn't match, you know, what they think of Evan Turner as. But again, this was a guy who played 81 games on a Boston team that was, if nothing else, a really solid collection. Like just a really solid team. There wasn't a single guy. So I think sliding him into that role makes sense.
Just a thought out there. I think I'm not looking at it right now, but if our memory serves, 2 missed games in 4 years.
Exactly 2 missed games in 4 years. So that's another thing that, and I'll be honest, that's the first thing I look at with these free agents. I'm fine with Chandler Parsons as a player. I think he's just a guy who's a little bit above average. I don't have anything against that, but he also plays 60 games a year. I don't think we could add another guy who plays, who just misses a couple of weeks. Like, that's too much for this team.
Yeah.
Because once, you know, he goes down at the same time that Drew goes down and Anthony's got a sore back or something, it's like, well, you know, that goes 2 weeks worth of games. But Evan Turner does check that box of just always being there.
And he's one of these guys, he can step in, like, say Drew goes down. You don't have to start like a typical point guard. You could start another shooter. You could and have Evan Turner run the offense or something. You run the ball through him or something like that, right? So he's one of these versatile guys. Now, like you said, wings are hot commodities. I don't know what he's going to get. He's an odd guy.
I think he could fall into my potential underpaid category.
That's the only scenario that I would want to see us do, because I think you're absolutely right. Value is the most important thing this year. You know, I don't want us to go and spend a ton of money just to get a wing. You know, we have to get a wing that works, you know, is with the cap and on the court. So if you can get him at a good value, I think that's a guy.
Number two. Okay. Yeah. Go into your number two.
Keep going. Number two. Actually, I don't know. Let's see. Number two. We mentioned Jared Dudley. I think that's another guy that falls into that. Right, kind of the other side of the wing, right? If you can get him at a good value, he's like your 3-and-D, really smart.
Not as much D as you would like.
Not as much D as you.
Which is terribly phrasing, but yeah. A little bit less defense than you'd prefer. I'm sorry, Jared. I don't think you deserved that unintentional shot from me. But Jared Dudley is actually number one on my list.
Really?
Yeah, and I think most of it's actually just because he's made it pretty clear the one thing he wants is security.
Yes.
And I think
that's it. Exactly. Just give him an extra year.
Yeah, just give him an extra year. And also just the way guys talk about him in the league. And also just beat writers. Like, the opinions of Jared Dudley are so high.
Very high.
And I think when you've had such a trying year, and you have someone like Anthony Davis, bringing in a guy that's universally respected and admired is almost worth more than he'll give you on the court. And I mean, this is what, you know, Washington tried to do with him. They tried to leverage him as, okay, we're going to bring him in for 1 year. He's going to be a solid fit on this team. He ended up playing way more than they expected, I'm sure. But it was kind of this, like, frankly, a Kendrick Perkins type personality who can actually contribute.
Right.
And I think that this team still needs more of that. I know we're not as young as we used to be, but he could be such an asset while also adding some professional credibility to this team. And I don't know, I'll ask you this. I was thinking about this today. How does he compare to Ryan Anderson in terms of just production to you? Like, what percent of Ryan Anderson does he replace?
Like, you put me on a spot, you asking for a number?
I mean, you can talk about it, or you can just give a single number. Okay, I'm gonna
work my way to a number here.
Okay, work your way to a number. Talk out loud. We don't have a limit on this podcast. We can go as long as we want.
Oh, okay. Let's work through it. Let's work through Graham's brain right now. Okay. Because Anderson has this perception as the flamethrower, when really he's like a one or two threes a game guy. I wrote about this. We talked about this a little bit when we did this the first time, but he's just become this go-to guy on the team, and to a fault. He gives you a lot, but it's also detracting a lot from what you want to do. You can see it in the fact that his assist percent, or the percent of his shots that are assisted, has decreased every year the last 4 years. And he's become more isolation heavy, more post up heavy. Not heavy, he does it some, but the team has turned into, right, he has so many, such a large percent of his offense is spot ups and coming off screens. And then the rest of it is the rest of his offense is isolation and post ups, right? All of his offense is get him the ball where he wants the ball. And it's turned into this, this thing where he gets the ball and the team stands and watches, right? Because they just know he's going to get it and he's going to shoot it. I don't know how you fix that or correct that, or change that type of mentality. I don't know if it's him or the team or what, but even though he's given you this good production, right? He's got this, he scores. I mean, he scores for you a ton, but, at times, like, you want the team to score. You don't just want him to score. Even if Dudley can't really get or match his production, I think if Dudley's out there and it fits more in a team system, and, you know, you have the four other guys in the court average maybe one or two more points a game with Dudley than they would with Anderson, you know, it makes up for that.
And just to be clear, like, so if you want to go back in time, look at my Ryan Anderson breakdown, everyone, I actually spent most of my time talking about the distribution of his games and how many threes he made, because there is this perception that, you know, at first it was, oh, he's always got the chance to hit six or seven threes in a night. And then the perception swung the other way of, oh, Ryan's only good for one or two, but he always gets one or two. He just never goes off.
He goes off.
And in my post was basically like, yeah, he goes off just about as much as everyone else in the league. There's nothing really unusual going on here. No. But for a guy who to be considered one of the best three-point shooters in the league, he's had a couple of down years after that neck injury. And it feels almost unfair to put that on Ryan, but it's just true.
It, like, sucks.
He shot 34% right after it. And he shot 37%, and I mean 36.6% last year. I feel bad putting that on him, but I mean, Because it feels so connected to that injury, right?
Yeah. It sucks because he was money that year.
Yeah, yeah.
That
he was
shooting
40%.
Undoubtedly
yeah.
his best year as like a pro was that year. And or at least just it was only what, like 22 games,
I think. And
He just came out of the gates on fire. Like it was.
Oh yeah, because he had that huge game that was either the first or second game where he put up like 6 or 7 threes.
Yeah, he was a 20-point per game scorer those 22 games.
Yeah, and it's weird to think about. It felt like Ryan Anderson was entering his peak, and of course, I don't really want to go into it because I'm just not equipped to talk about that stuff. But
yeah,
he obviously had a lot going on that offseason personally, yeah. And it felt like he was, you know, just leaving a lot on the court. And to watch, yeah. It just feels weird in hindsight because it just feels like his prime was kind of taken away from him.
Yeah, and like, this is why I think a change of scenery would do him well.
Yeah, I mean. Just on a personal note, I think he's got like probably a lot of memories here that he wouldn't mind trying something different for a while. So Godspeed. Yeah. But yeah, that year where he got injured in Boston, it was that horrific. Who was the guy? Was it Gerald? Was it
Gerald Wallace?
Yeah, Gerald Wallace. That's who it was. Who hit him
guy
in the back on accident?
Crashes yep. in.
Yeah,
Anderson. I shouldn't laugh. It was terrible.
Right, but that first game he had 6 threes. He had 2 other games with 7 that season, and he's just never been to that level again.
No.
And the reason I got in on this was just to say, you know, Jared Dudley hit 42% last year.
Jared Dudley came off, I think it was 2 back surgeries and yeah. had his like best statistical production year at the age of 30 last season, coming off 2 surgeries on his back.
Yeah, and so Jared
he's not an athletic guy. He doesn't use his athleticism. He doesn't need it, you know?
Yeah, and I mean Jared's probably more of a concern as a defender than Ryan, in my opinion, just because.
Really?
Yeah, because I think Ryan gets the benefit of being a little bit. I mean, I actually don't even know if he's that much bigger, but he's a little bit bigger. So he can play guys who just aren't as fast as him, where I feel like Jared ends up on the wing a lot and his feet just get torn up. I mean, guys just get around him.
I don't know.
I mean. It's still kind of hard to say that
it's hard.
It matters that much.
Anderson
more.
Was really bad on
but I mean, some of that was
even like, when he challenged, it just wasn't even like a real challenge, you know.
Yeah,
even
we also
if,
put Ryan Anderson on centers, like
yeah.
kind of a lot because AD didn't want to guard them, or we didn't want AD to guard them, I should say.
Yeah,
so that's a tough ask for him. I mean,
yeah, remember when he was on Boogie a whole game?
Oh yeah, I hated those games.
I felt so bad for him after those games.
But yeah, so again, Jared's a guy who's shooting on his career 40% from three.
40% for career.
42% last year. So if he's every bit the shooter that Ryan is, let's say he's a push on defense. Like I don't and but we're also talking about Ryan Anderson getting $15 to $20 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mean I know Ryan does a little bit more in certain places for you, but I guess my point is I'm not convinced Jared Dudley wouldn't be a fine proxy for Ryan Anderson on this team.
No.
Which I feel like is a bold statement to a lot of people, but I don't know. Maybe that just says more about where Ryan Anderson was.
There was this whole thing about Dudley playing the small ball four this year, too. And you're right. Like, that if he's playing the four guard and the fours, like, he... Yeah, no. Like, it doesn't work. But... It's pretty bad, but I think just from a, I think he could probably give you. I've got to put a number. Okay, 70% of his production.
Yeah, and I was just about to kind of pull this nosedive up because I could just feel people getting angry at us. Ryan Anderson's better. Like,
yes.
Don't get me wrong. Ryan Anderson is clearly better.
He's a better offensive player.
Yeah, I mean, like, so just for some comparison, if we're going to use PER as sort of a. Like a one-stop shop for basketball equivalency. Ryan's always been like this 17 PER guy, and you know Jared Dudley's closer to like 13.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a guy who's a little bit above average versus a guy who's a little bit below average.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the key is how do those salaries match up? If Ryan Anderson's going to be a 4-year, $80 million contract, but Jared Dudley could be had for 4 years, 40, that's a huge gap.
I think he tweeted, he even, like, said it. There's, like, a report where he just, He wants 3 years. That's what he wants. So, and I think you can get him, what is, like, probably like 7 to 9 a year, somewhere in that range.
Really?
Maybe.
I have no idea. I've given up trying to predict guys' salaries this year.
Yeah, I shouldn't even throw things out. I'm just going to end up looking like an idiot.
Yeah. Because the guy who made me convince me to stop doing this was Jeff Green. Because yeah. I can convince myself Jeff Green's getting like $7 million a year, and then I'm like, well, what if he gets 17? Because just another NBA coach is like, I can make Jeff Green good.
For some reason, I get sucked into that too. I know he's not that good. Like, I know it.
but you look at him and you're like, but he's not bad.
I'm searching, and Jeff Green's names pop up. I'm like, well, could it? I get sucked into it, and I know I shouldn't, you know. And,
you know what? This podcast is a safe space. When I first started looking at free agents, and I just, like, went down the entire list, Jeff Green's name, I saw it, and I was like, I wouldn't mind if the Pelicans got him.
Right? It just stands out. For some reason, like, if you look at a list, and then you see Jeff Green's name on that list, it's like, Jeff Green. But I know his name should not stand out, and I do not want him on the team. But then it's like, well, we need somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think we made it through two players. Who's your third guy? I mean, I know I've done this before, but who's your third guy for the people at home?
Well, so this was the other one that I wrote about, and I think since then, I think there's been quite a few other people write about it. Like, he's become like a thing now, I think. Jared Sullinger. I think people are starting to warm up to the idea, and I'm glad, because I think, like we said before, you got to find a big for Davis, I think. And he is a restricted free agent who had an absolutely horrible playoff series and end of the season play. He's 24 years old. The Celtics are looking. They're gonna find some star who's gonna come there. They got a meeting with Dwight Howard day one, July 1st. They have a meeting with him. Howard's looking for $31 million. I don't have a high opinion of Dwight Howard, even though he's a really good player. But it screams, like, you know, buy low. You know, you can get this guy, this 24-year-old, clearly talented big man. You can snag him away. I don't think he ever averaged more than like 28 a game. So,
28 minutes, you mean, right?
Yeah, 28 minutes a game. Yeah, no, yeah. Jared Dudley, or sorry, Jared Sullinger. Two Jareds. Jared Sullinger never came close to 28 points a game. But, like, he gives you a little bit of what Anderson did, right? And when people are going to, like, laugh when I say that. But really, like, he has a very diverse offensive game. He's not efficient at all. Not efficient. Throwing it out there, Anderson's way more efficient. Anderson can actually make shots. Sullinger shoots them. He'll make them every now and then. But he's a competitor. And he's going to, if he's open, he's going to shoot it. If he's not, he's going to pass it. He's even quoted, he's got that quote. It's the same thing. He says, I kind of just threw analytics out the window, played within the team, and popped into space. And if I was open, I shot it. If not, I move it, right? That's like what we're looking for. He can play on the perimeter, right? He can post up. He can shoot. He can spot up. This is all things I've all said before, but he can post up. He can shoot, spot up. He can face up. He can kind of do it all on the offensive end, even if he's not very efficient at it. And he's playing next to Davis, he doesn't really have to be super efficient because he's not going to get a ton of touches. And I think Davis, being Davis, drawing all the attention that Davis gets could help open up the game a little bit for Sullinger, who's a smart, smart player, right? IQ, huge thing for us. We need IQ. He's a smart player. He's going to take advantage of space given to him, right? That's something we need, right? We can't have guys out there anymore with the way we're trying to play that just take up space. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work anymore. He gives you a little bit of that offense that Anderson does, where he can pop out and kind of space it. He gives you a little bit of what Ashik gives you. He was one of the top 20 rebounders in the league, right? He's at least by rebounding percentage. He only played like 23 minutes a game this year, I think, and was still like top 10 in offensive rebounds. And he does a lot. He does a lot of stuff. Well-rounded, buy low, 24 years old, fits everything. Do it.
Done. Yeah. And I think the advantage to Sullinger is, like, well, maybe I should ask you, I see him coming off the bench if you were in a Pelicans uniform.
Totally. I mean, I'd be okay. Start him, put him off the bench. Exactly. You can do either. He's not going to command a starting spot, right?
Yeah. You don't have to worry about his ideal spot or his ideal role would actually kind of be what Ryan Anderson was, right? Which was coming off the bench, but maybe closing games.
Yeah.
And he's kind of weird because he's so thick that I actually could see him doing the whole guarding the center thing that we did to Anderson, but actually being all right at it.
Yes. Like, he is a huge guy.
Yeah.
And that's actually a problem, though. He's got conditioning issues.
But which is obviously a concern, and you know, I guess in an offense like Alvin Gentry runs, but I think sometimes that's overstated a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, if he's coming off the bench playing 24, 25, 26 minutes, that's not too much.
And also, like, him playing next to Anthony Davis is going to be the easiest season of his career.
Yes.
I mean, he's going
to
get...
He was playing next to... I don't even know who they would play him next to, so I shouldn't even say. But the other bigs on that team were not people who would command anything from the defense.
I mean, there's very few players in the league that command the attention that Anthony Davis does, and Kelly Olynyk is certainly not in that crew.
Yeah.
And neither is Tyler Zeller. So,
yeah
I really like the idea of fitting Jared Sullinger in there. I also agree that I think it's just a good value pick. But this is all going off the assumption that we're expecting the market to go the way everyone says it will,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, I guess, it you know, won't. Yeah, and it almost certainly won't, just because those things never work out the way they're supposed to.
Right.
But having said that, I think Jared Sullinger would fit in well here, but he's another guy where, again, I don't know if the number is going to be 8 or like 12 million or 16 million. It's just so hard to tell.
He could get somewhere around like 16 or 18 million, you know, because he is a 24-year-old big man who is been a huge contributor on a playoff team. You know, he's one of their go-to guys, even if he hasn't, you know, worked out totally. He's still only 24.
Yeah, and the skill set just seems there.
He's clear. Like, he's one of these guys who's clearly got talent, who's clearly got a spot in this league. Who could be more, right?
Yeah. I mean, in an era where people are just talking constantly about ball movement, I think a power forward who's willing to move the ball is kind of in high demand.
Yes.
So let's talk about, we've kind of had these value picks. It's almost like we're stock pickers and trying to pick out the stuff that's undervalued. Is there anyone who's at the top of a list of free agents? So we're talking Dwight Howard. Not Kevin Durant, not Dwight Howard, really, because I guess these guys have already said they're not the visits they're going to be making.
Yeah.
So let's say, hypothetically, if you were Dell Demps, is there anyone that you would like to see us go after that's sort of a big name?
No.
There's no one that even entices you a little bit?
No. I honestly can't think of one.
Honestly, I mean, I would max Dwight Howard.
You would?
I really think I would, yeah.
I might hang up on you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I'd do it.
Can we curse? Can we curse in this?
We probably shouldn't.
I'm not going to. I'm kidding. Yeah. No. Just no. Like, yeah.
I mean,
like
it's not my money, and it's completely hypothetical, so yeah, I have no problem saying that. This isn't like a test.
Yeah. No, he's, I don't know. Like, he would help. He's good. That would be it.
Yeah.
Like, that would be it. It would be Drew, Davis, Howard. If it worked out, good. If not, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, and that, okay.
I'm not throwing all my cards on the table for Dwight Howard.
Right, exactly. That's the thing with this deal, right, is that you're going all in on a guy. The problem that I have is I still think Dwight Howard's really good. I think the reason we hate him is because he's an annoying guy.
Yeah.
Which is weird because he was once the most loved guy in the league. But now he's just an adult man who collects assault rifles and snakes. And that's just...
He does?
Yeah, that's like his thing.
I knew the snake thing.
Yeah, I think he's also into assault rifles. And his best friend's Chandler Parsons, so there's a lot to hate here. But...
Why do people hate Chandler Parsons?
I think just because he's... Well, oh God, I can't believe we're going to do this on two podcasts in a row, but I think it's just because he's, you know, like a 25-year-old, 6'8", good-looking millionaire. There's a lot to hate there.
Yeah. He has like a fratty look to him, I guess.
Oh, yeah, he definitely has, yeah. Yeah, like...
Oh, yeah. Oof. Very, but yeah, very that's I guess he's a higher-end guy that I would also like want to avoid.
Chandler Parsons?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting talked about a lot, and we can save the rest of my Dwight Howard defense because it's not going to happen. I just want to get that reaction out of you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think Chandler Parsons just feels like a guy the Pelicans would sign because he's above average on offense. I think that's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really an average defender, and that just is kind of what most of the Pelicans roster looks like. Is elite at one end.
Is it, though? Who is our average defender?
I mean, is like superior at one end of the ball and does nothing on the other end.
Oh, okay.
So the only guy I think that falls into the category of being much better on defense and on offense is probably Dante Cunningham when put in the right role. But yeah, most of our guys are, you know, have a skill on offense and then aren't great on defense. So, because I mean, just this is my opinion, but I think Drew and AD are probably our only two, honest to goodness, two-way players. Maybe Quincy Pondexter, but
he's like that.
I feel like he's just average
day,
on both
above
ends,
average on a bad day, below average on both sides.
Just, but mostly locks into the mean on both roles. But he's also had a very volatile career.
Yeah,
like every other year has been a good year for him, and then the other years he just doesn't get any playing time. So
yeah,
I think Chandler. The reason his name's getting brought up is just because he feels like a Pelican. He feels like a guy you've kind of forgotten about because he's only played 60 games. And I think people are worried because I think they've misidentified what Dell actually likes in players. And they're like, oh, this guy is, you know, one dimensional and hurt a lot of the times. So
this guy's not that great. We should sign him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has some sense of potential, but not really. So, yeah, I think... The only other top guy I would make an argument for would be, and this is not trolling, if I were just being honest, Nicholas Batum. I think that'd be the only guy.
I'd do Batum. I forgot about him. I just counted him out of free agency because I just assume he's going back to Charlotte.
Yeah, another guy you haven't heard a lot of rumors about, and I wonder if it's for that reason. He's just made it clear he's going to go back to Charlotte, and there's nothing really to do there. I guess Charlotte has to max him there, right?
You know, that's a good question. I think it'll be close.
Apparently he's got a meeting with the Lakers, so.
Why do people meet the Lakers? I have this fantasy. Did I say this last podcast? Because I think I might have. But I had this fantasy that the Lakers are just going to become super dysfunctional for a long time.
Like, maybe they'll trade... like Brandon Ingram for Vlade Divac and have him be the GM of the Lakers and just have this brain trust of Mitch Kupchak. And
that would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would be great. As much as I like Brandon Ingram, I'm willing to sacrifice one Duke player to see more bad Lakers basketball.
Oh yeah.
But you just know they're going to get someone like Batum and then their team's going to be fine.
God, I hope not.
So yeah, that's the only major free agent I can think of that I would go all out for. Luol Deng is definitely not coming here. So
100%. Somebody was like, "What about Deng?" And I was like, "You haven't. You don't know what's
going on." Yeah, if you haven't been keeping up with current events, but that's not happening. So the thing that we've kind of scheduled on is on putting in the back of the podcast before we. It's on last on our list. I went on a rant last time we recorded this podcast. Actually, a couple. Related to this topic, but I want to talk about Kent Bazemore and Harrison Barnes.
Go for it.
I'm not one to typically defend UNC guys, But I think Harrison Barnes has gotten a really raw deal from the internet. What are your
thoughts? He's been deemed by, what do you call them, armchair GMs or couch GMs, armchair quarterbacks, whatever you want to call them, as whoever signs him is automatically a loser in free agency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna drop the guy's name because it might make him sound like he doesn't know what's up, but I actually had one of the writers from our site text me one night while it was, I guess, during the finals, and everyone was like, the joke was just, man, whoever plays for Harrison Barnes is gonna overpay. And this guy was just like, what's the deal here? Can you explain to me? Is there a joke I've missed or something? And I honestly couldn't, because, and here's, I'm not saying Harrison Barnes is good. I've never made that argument. I'm just simply arguing, you have no idea.
Nope.
He is a 23-year-old who was, I don't know, the fourth best player at best on his team, probably fifth most nights.
On his 73-win team.
Yeah, who went to back-to-back finals.
Yeah.
And if LeBron James didn't exist, would probably be a two-time NBA champion. But there's something hip about, well, we're just going to overpay for this guy because he doesn't do a lot of stuff, and, you know, he's just blah, blah, blah. I just can't wrap my mind around it. This arrogance and certainty that he's just not going to be a good NBA player when our sample size is so small. And you know what? Yeah, if you put him in a bigger role, he might not be any good. He might have benefited from a lot of open looks, but he also may have been held back because of that. I mean, yeah. I'm getting tired of us using this phrase, but sure, D&3, whatever, right?
Yeah.
If this is a guy whose primary skill set is shooting threes, by the way, he 37% on his career the last two seasons, he's been above 38%, so better than Ryan Anderson. At, you know, not a similar volume, but again, he's got two of the greatest shooters of all time on his team. Not of, like, currently in the NBA, of all time. If that's what this guy is playing with, and his main skill set is effectively made redundant by the other guys on the floor, like, what are you expecting to see? Like, are we just supposed to remove all context for the sake of a hashtag? I just don't get it.
I don't get hashtags.
Yeah, that's also befuddling to me, and maybe that's why I'm so upset about this. I just don't understand why you're hashtagging these comments about Harrison Barnes.
Sorry to take away from your rant, but when you said that, that just sudden realization, I don't think I've ever, I think I might have tweeted like three hashtags, and I have like, I don't have that many tweets.
I only hashtag something seriously when I think it's a funny joke and I want strangers to like it.
Ah, okay.
So if you go through my Twitter history, you can see which jokes I'm proud of and which ones I think are so-so.
Oh, God. I'm going to go look through your Twitter history.
Those are my general feelings on Harrison Barnes. I just don't get the vitriol around this guy.
He's going to be fine. Like, even if somebody overpays him, big deal. He's not a bad NBA player. Like, he's not.
I don't know that he's a good one, but I don't feel like he doesn't deserve to be in the NBA. And that's how far we've gone with this joke that Harrison Barnes isn't actually good.
No, it's just because he didn't show up really in the finals that much.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sorry that he's played the same. He's their three, right? He's the small forward. Who's the small forward on the other team? You know, he wasn't matched up against him, but, you know, playing against freaking Cleveland super team that has, you know, to spend all their money on winning the championship to pay off their luxury tax, you know. He one series, and all of a sudden the guy is the bust of the year. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, to me, well, also the even entire rumor that the Pelicans are so interested in Harrison Barnes because Alvin Gentry, like, is so flimsy to me.
I didn't even really hear that rumor. Like, I've heard people say it, but
yeah, that's what I mean.
For it to be like a real rumor, there has to be like a source for me. And,
oh yeah, it's,
you know,
this unsourced idea that because these two guys work together.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Harrison Barnes is. I think he's a risk because there's just not a complete data set on him.
Right.
So it's really hard to estimate what he is on a normal team.
I think that's a reason why Dell's not going to go after him. We've seen Dell, like, he wants to work with what he knows.
Yeah, and frankly, I want this team to stay away from uncertainty. So I'm against Harrison Barnes for that reason. I'm not against Harrison Barnes because I think he's secretly really bad at basketball.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he was the number one recruited high school player, then the seventh pick overall, and then on one of the best teams of all time. And it was all a ruse. Like, I don't
think it was all.
Yeah.
It's rigged. It's all rigged.
Yeah, exactly. This is just a lie the NBA. Adam Silver has been.
Adam Silver has a deal with ESPN so that they have talking points over the summer.
Yeah, this was his deal for like Duke to have a couple of amazing teams. He's like one UNC guy he's going to be the worst UNC guy secretly, but I'll make him look average.
I was talking about this with somebody today, like ESPN has to have a deal with LeBron. Like he opted out specifically so that the day after the championship they could talk about him going to the Lakers.
Dude, I saw it that night that
it was like an hour after the game.
One of the most emotional moments I've seen in sports that like wasn't connected to one of my teams was him just weeping because you could see the weight like almost physically come off his shoulders.
And that was the worst moment for me because he was weeping and there's the shot of him weeping right from the floor. The camera's on the ground next to him weeping, and then around him and also in the shot are seven other cameras around him on the floor. Like he's crying his eyes out with literally eight cameras like just shoved, not in his face, but literally from every single angle in a circle around him on the floor. I was like, I guess that's what they got to do. But that was like one of those moments where I'm just like, come on.
I mean, if anybody's used to that level of attention, it's LeBron James.
Oh yeah. He's mastered ignoring it. So
sure. Except for the decision and
how much. Well, that was years ago. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's fine with talking to the media, but okay. The other guy I want to talk about, I originally had Chandler Parsons on this list, but I think we've kind of covered him and our feelings on him. Mm-hmm. Sort of the perfect foil to Harrison Barnes, or the inverse, the guy that I'm equally baffled by, is Kent Bazemore. And I used to love Kent Bazemore, and I guess I still do. I shouldn't let people take that away from me, but
he's a good story.
Yeah, and he was such a goofy guy that I just really loved watching him play. I love screaming, he doesn't baze less. These were great moments for me. But now I live in a world where he is the best value free agent that nobody's looking at, but somehow everyone wants. And
like, this is what the internet does. They pick and choose who they're going to tear down and put up. And they tear down Barnes and they put up Bazemore. And are they really that different?
Well, like, here's one meaningful difference to me. Harrison Barnes is 24. He turned 24 a month ago. Kent Bazemore, 26. And going to be 27 tomorrow, actually.
Oh.
Or in 2 days. So that
alone. Day one of free agency.
Yeah, day one of free agency is a year older. I mean, I know that's not how years work, but it's a great math joke. So 27 years old, never a PER above 15. This is the hot comment always about Harrison Barnes, right? Never had a PR above 15. Well, neither has Kent Bazemore. Kent Bazemore is described as the quintessential 3-and-D, gives you everything you want. Best season from three, shot 36%, made 48 threes. So
what he's doing for his career.
No, his best season, peak was 36%. He made 48 threes that year, took about 1.8 a game. Last year, he obviously saw an uptick in terms of playing time. He played almost 28 minutes. But yeah, if you just look at, and it's really easy to see this as a trend and say, you know, he's improved, he's coming up. You want to buy low and ride that. But the problem is when a guy is 27, he's probably reaching his peak. If this story started with him at 21 and he was now 24, I could see that. But I mean, I don't mind Kent Bazemore, and I wouldn't be disappointed if the Pelicans got him. Again, I think this is a matter of perception to me. Like, how good is Kent Bazemore really? And the idea that he's the perfect wing for the Pelicans, and this is what we've been missing, I just kind of find bizarre.
I don't get it either. And again, I hope it's something we stay away from. Like, these guys, you know, maybe they do work out, but the cost that these guys, or the price tag that these guys are supposedly commanding, and I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows? Like, GMs are smarter than internet talking heads, right? So who knows what these guys are going to get? But it's the idea that, like, some guy who averages what, like 11 a game, is the key that's going to unlock our offense. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
it just feels totally misplaced to me. And I guess the reason I can't think of Barnes without thinking of Bazemore is because, again, it comes back to a lack of data and a lack of really evidence, because it seems like a lot of people are saying, you know, you can put Kent Bazemore in a bigger role and he'll succeed. That's, to me, is the same thing as saying, well, or the same kind of fallacy of saying, well, if you put Harrison Barnes in a bigger role, he's going to fail.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't really think those things are easy to predict. Like, it's really easy to go back and say, man, that Oklahoma City trade was such a bad deal for James Harden. But James Harden was coming off a really bad performance in the finals, and nobody thought he was going to be an MVP candidate when he was traded. That just wasn't out there.
As a side note, I like what OKC is doing.
Yeah, I actually really love the Orlando trade. I know a lot of people think they fleeced Orlando, but I think it kind of makes sense for both teams.
I think it does too. And, like, that's what you, I think, have to do as a small market. Like, it worked out perfect for them. They drafted perfectly. It just worked out perfectly. But now that they have that talent level, they're using it to build sustainability. Like, the Harden trade, people hate it. They hate it. But they weren't going to be able to pay. You're going to get stuck with no depth and nothing, and you're not going to be able to pay everybody. And so, you know, you keep them, and maybe you make a one shot. You know, you keep the three round and have your, like, one shot here at going for a championship, or you trade one of them, build some, like, depth and sustainability. Like, they do the same thing again with Ibaka, right? You can bring them, you can pay everybody and bring them back, and, like, sacrifice your team to keep this talent around to try to make a run at a championship, and then watch them run away when you probably don't win one, or maybe don't win one. Or you can take advantage of the fact that, like, you're on a high right now, trade one of these players, get in some younger talent, same thing they did with Harden, and then just keep replenishing that base, right? I like it. I don't know. I like what they're doing.
Yeah, and
I don't know if I described it well, but that,
yeah. I mean, the big key from this story is that Dion Waiters might be looking for a home, and I think Dion would love New Orleans.
Oh.
That would be awful.
I don't know if I would love Dion.
Oh, that is so low reward, high risk. I would actually be kind of excited about it from a pure entertainment standpoint. It would also be just a huge surprise after, like, I think I have a pretty good sense of who Dell Demps is. And you know what? I'll call my shot, and I'm going to ask you to do this after I do it. I think this offseason, Dell's going to end up with a couple of average players, like 15 PER guys, but on decent contracts. I think this is a really great offseason for him to find another international player on a nice contract. So thinking kind of in the mode of Gustavo Ayon and Alexis Agenza, he's done this pretty regularly where he'll find nice role players on the margin. I feel like his mode of operation is going to be, let's just get some quality players in here, patch up a nice mid-30s, low 40 win team, and go into next year and see what we can do then.
Mm-hmm.
I would love it if Dell was like, everyone expects me to just try to right the ship and get in some high character, high, you know, average quality guys. But what if we went Dion Waiters, Lance Stephenson? Like, I would love that out of left field, just for the entertainment value alone of trying to put all those guys together.
That would, like, there's no other explanation or reason you would have not just two of the both of them.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. No.
There's
give me
no
both.
Other that reason, but for you're not putting a winning team out there. You're putting an entertaining team out there. Look, we might not win, but we're damn sure going to be
You're going to watch. Yeah.
I'd watch it.
There's like a 20% chance Anthony Davis murders one of them at some point.
He just decides he's going to play.
Yeah,
Anthony Davis says, screw it. I'm going to go finish out college.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and get my degree because that's more profitable than my time here. All right, well, so do you? What do you expect from this offseason? Similar to what I described? Do you think there's
going
to
be that's what I hope is what you described. What I expect is low-key, I guess. Like, I think we'll make one signing that everybody's like, okay, good, we got something we need. This guy's pretty good at it. And then the rest are going to be those pretty average. Nobody's really going to be excited about it, but they're probably pretty good pickups. And going into the season and into next season and just the future, I think that's what we need to do. And just so people know, like, getting to around 40 wins is a step in the right direction right now. Like, we should be happy about that. Like, expectations were really high last year. Didn't work out for whatever reason. Not going to go into it. But, like, riding the ship is not going to happen this year. And reaching to try to right the ship, I think, would this offseason would be a terrible mistake. You can't fix it. There's too many holes. There's too many minutes. Too many injuries. Whatever you want to put it, you know. You know, 42 wins, winning team, 41 wins, 500 team. I think that's very easily attainable. And you get that. You get that with what we have. Davis still locked up for years. Re-signed Drew. You got depth from this offseason. You go into next offseason and have cap space, lots of cap space, because you didn't blow it all this summer. You know, it looks much more appealing. Right now, like, we're not in discussions for big-name free agents because of such a terrible year, right? We have put together a team that competes for the A spot, plays winning basketball, like, not giving up on games, not going on 10-game losing streaks. Like, that's pretty easy to avoid, I think. I think things start to go up there. But this offseason, just keep it, you know, KISS. Keep it sweet and simple, right? KISS. Keep it sweet and simple.
I mean, sure, it's a great catchphrase to end the show on. I don't think I have any... What?
I do SAT tutoring on the weekends sometimes, and that's like the writing section, and it's one of the things I tell the kids. I don't know.
So you're taking your work life to your podcast life?
Yeah. I really want a catchphrase. I say word a lot. I don't know if people do this still. I picked it up like 2 years ago. Because you can say word as a response to anything.
Yeah, I've actually had this argument that word really doesn't mean anything, but it can be used in almost any context.
It means that I acknowledge what you said. Yeah. I heard what you said. It's literally all it is.
I think word really means I'm uncomfortable with silence.
Word.
And yeah, along those lines, I guess we should probably end this podcast. So there's not a lot of Pelicans rumors out there. I think we're both expecting a quiet off-season for the Pels, but if anything does happen, if there's any late-breaking news, we will be here to break it down. I'm not sure when Ryan gets back from vacation. I guess I should know when we have to give him his podcast back, but I would imagine he would be here to do a free agency recap, and of course, we'll be here breaking down Summer League and the rest of the stuff that goes on this off-season. So
maybe we'll just keep it. Maybe we'll just keep his podcast.
Well, dude, I have the password, and I feel like I can probably hack in if he wants to change it, so... There's going to be some surprise pods, so just keep an eye out on Twitter. We're taking this thing back. It's coming back to the people, the podcast. Go.